Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the July NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it is their turn to speak. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by Teams will be acknowledged to speak first and then by phone. You will be asked to provide your name and organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comments. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to unmute your phone, press star and then one on your telephone keypad to be placed into a queue to provide comments. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star and then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call at any time, please press star and then zero. I will now turn the call over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the open public meeting notice, please?
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Manira, could you call the roll, please?
Yes. Chairman Terry O'Toole?
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Sarlo?
Here.
Bill Elagia?
Here.
Aisha Glover? Aisha Glover?
She's not on.
Fred Dumont?
Here.
Marcia Marley?
Here.
Maciel Ferrara?
Present.
Robert Shimko? Robert Shimko? Okay. Josh Weinrich?
Here.
Aaron Cruz from the executive branch?
Here. Good morning.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo?
Here.
Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo?
Here.
Manuel Polino for Banking Commissioner Justin Zimmerman?
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean LaTourette?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manira. We have two sets of...
This meeting is being recorded. This meeting is being transcribed.
June 11th NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. I kindly remind board members to please state your name for the record when making a motion or a second. Could I hear a motion to approve the June 11th board meeting minutes, please?
Dragon motion.
Thank you. I think Josh, you seconded. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the regular board meeting minutes are approved. Secondly, before you are, executive session minutes from the June 11th.
This meeting is no longer being transcribed. This meeting is no longer being recorded.
The executive session board meeting minutes, please.
Move it, Josh.
Thank you. A second?
Second.
Elijah.
Thanks. We'll consider that, Phil. Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
I abstain.
Hearing
it's Liz.
None.
Terry, I wasn't there for the executive session, so I abstain. It's Liz.
Got it. Noted. Thank you. Okay. Hearing that, the minutes are approved. Let me... jump right in with some brief chairman's remarks. We have a full agenda today. I wanted to highlight a project that speaks to the very heart of the NJEDA mission, which is to build a stronger, fairer economy by investing in the health and well-being of New Jersey families, because inclusive economic growth starts with strong, supported communities. Since New Jersey First Lady Tammy Murphy launched the Nurture NJ initiative in 2019, to improve access to equitable care for expectant mothers and babies, the NJEDA, along with our partners at the New Jersey Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Authority, have advanced projects designed to further the state's goal of making New Jersey the safest state in the nation in which to have a baby. Last year, the NJEDA board took crucial steps to support the creation of the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center, including the approval of an MOU to purchase property in North Trenton and the selection of three anchor tenants, Rutgers University, Capital Health, and the Trenton Health Team. Since then, site planning has advanced significantly with community input and interagency collaboration, laying the groundwork for a center that reflects the needs and voices of residents and families. We are proud of the efforts of the NJEDA team, as well as the work our partners at Ballinger, Torcon, and the John S. Watson Institute for Urban Policy and Research at Kane University, who have helped ensure a collaborative and smooth approach in developing as the center moves forward from idea to reality. Yesterday, the project took a crucial step forward as representatives from the NJEDA joined Governor Phil Murphy, First Lady Tammy Murphy, and Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Authority for a groundbreaking ceremony. Once completed, the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center will work to address crucial issues around maternal and infant health in Trenton and across New Jersey, including through academic and perinatal workforce programs that will train the next generation of professionals, comprehensive clinical services, and research into groundbreaking treatments and medicines. It will serve as a community hub in the city of Trenton, with local residents informing the continued development of the center through an on-the-ground, interactive, iterative, and open dialogue process. The center will serve as a national model in its mission to provide access to quality and equitable health care, championing policies and practices that ensure mothers and their babies are safe and supported. Additionally, it is projected to create over 150 permanent jobs, train hundreds of healthcare workers annually, and provide direct access to care for thousands within its first years of operation. The NJEDA has been at the forefront of advancing programs and initiatives that strengthen economic security for the people of New Jersey, recognizing that access to childcare, nutritious food, and quality healthcare is essential to a stronger and more inclusive economy. Through continued support for First Lady Murphy's Nurture NJ initiative, as well as further investments in food security and childcare, New Jersey will remain one of the best states in the nation to work and raise a family, increasing our economic competitiveness. We're proud to be part of this transformational effort, and even prouder of what it represents for the state of New Jersey. With that, let me turn it over to Tim for his CEO's report.
Great. Thanks, Chairman, and good morning, everyone. And Mary and I are going to sort of tag team the CEO report here because she's going to jump in with a couple important updates. But as the Chairman noted a couple times, we have a lot to get through, and I think a fixed window of time here, so I'll try to be brief. I do just want to pick up right where the Chairman left off, though, with regard to the Maternal Infant Health Innovation Center groundbreaking yesterday. That was a really special and momentous day for lots of us and for the city of Trenton, and most importantly for the moms and babies that call Trenton home and will call Trenton home, as well as the entire state. It's a project that has been 6 years and 7 years in the making, and you know the First Lady's leadership. She came to one of our board meetings to express her appreciation for the team's efforts. It's been an extraordinary labor of love and a lot of hard work that I think is going to be one of the most transformative projects that certainly I'll ever be a part of. I just want to do a couple shout outs and thank yous first to the leaders of the team within the EDA that worked on this, particularly Mary, Tara, Kathleen, Michelle. Lots of others, the real estate team, Steve and Juan, and George Santos before he had left, just to pull together, you know, buying a site, prepping a site, getting the financing together, doing the community engagement that the chairman mentioned with the Watson Institute and Barbara George Johnson and her great team. Doing this right, as best we can to be doing it right, has been an extremely intensive process. And I just want to give them all a particular shout out. I also want to give a shout out to Liz and Julie and her team within Treasury. Every important thing that goes on in Trenton is happening within the city of Trenton, is happening in the context of an executive order the governor signed early on in the administration of Liz and the late and missed Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver co-chaired that effort. And so I want to give a shout out to Liz and her team for their partnership and collaboration. I also just want to mention, too, when we think about sort of doing as much good as we can all at once, the governor mentioned this yesterday, but this project's being built under a PLA. Rob, I know you were there. Angela, I know you were there, sitting right behind us at the event yesterday, celebrating that this is not just a good thing for moms and babies, but for the women and men of the trade that are going to build this building and put food on the table. So it's just a win in every direction. The other thing I'd mention is that the Innovation Center is going to be home to, and we announced this on Monday, Tuesday, home of part of the 12th Strategic Innovation Center. We announced with Rowan University, Plug and Play, Cooper University Hospital, and a few other partners, a MedTech and Digital Health Strategic Innovation Center with three locations that we can now point to, one in Mullica Hill in Glassboro, one in Camden, and one now in Trenton at the Maternal and Infant Health Center. So using the toolkit of innovation to attack, pernicious challenges like the terrible racial and ethnic disparities that persist in maternal and infant health. And that's the 12th Strategic Innovation Center. I think that's the fifth we've announced this year, including the plasma, Princeton Plasma Physics Lab initiative that we announced just after our last board meeting as well. So, the governor, it's not just a talking point when the governor says we're running through the tape. Those of us who are running with him sometimes wish that was more of a joke, but he's very serious. We're running through the tape and working our posteriors off to get as much done as we can under his leadership and with the resources that the governor and legislature have given us. To that end, it's been a busy season of events and activities in the state. We had North Shore through the month of June. We had the Club World Cup, which was a huge success. And principally a shout out to the team at the host committee and SEA and New Jersey Transit for moving a ton of people in and out of the stadium. That's obviously a warm up for the big one, which is next summer, the FIFA World Cup. We have items on this agenda related to the World Cup and to North Shore as it relates to the budget. But I think when New Jersey has been in the spotlight and will continue to be in the spotlight in a good way on lots of different fronts because of the efforts of our team and this board and obviously the resources provided by the governor and the legislature in across multiple budgets. And we'll talk more about that as we get to some of the items. With that, again, much more I can talk about, but I'll hand it to Mary to do a quick rundown of the board dashboard, as well as some of the updates from the budget and legislative season that concluded a couple weeks ago. Mary, over to you.
Thanks, Tim. So as you said, running through the tape and just a couple highlights from the June board dashboard that was circulated, we hit 258 approvals in the month of June, totaling $124 million of awards. A couple things to highlight. You'll see it was a big month for the Small Business Improvement Grant Program with 64 approvals in the month of June. And our Route 80 grant program continued to be successful with 68 approvals, which brings right now the total amount awarded to $2.6 million. The program is closed at this point, but we anticipate wrapping up a few final approvals, probably landing in the $3 million range for funds expended under that program. So really proud of the work that teams have been doing across all of these efforts, and that one in particular did prove to be quite functional for the businesses we were trying to support. Also on the dashboard, you'll see an overview of our Aspire portfolio as of June, and today in the meeting, we will review the latest iteration of rules for that program. Once these rules go into effect, we do anticipate additional approvals coming in the latter part of the year, so that's a good step forward for the Aspire program. On the screen now, we have a snapshot of how EDA made out in the state's fiscal year 2026 budget. I think overall, the picture here reflects that while the state budget was a tough budget cycle and certainly funding overall at the state level was more constrained than it has been in years past, this effort and funding for EDA reflects the importance of our programs, the value that they bring, not just to the governor, but also in the view of the legislature, which is really, really impactful. So, things like our Main Street Recovery Fund still getting funded, really happy to see that still in the budget. We'll talk later in the meeting about effectuating the funding for arts and innovation, as well as marketing around those initiatives. And part of the budget cycle, the governor did announce and the legislature has passed a bill to create a manufacturing tax credit program. This is really a brainchild of our team here at EDA, and it's great to see it land on the governor's desk for review and hopefully eventual approval. Hector, if we go to the next slide. Perfect. So speaking of legislation, as with every budget cycle, there's always a slew of legislation that comes through around the same time. You'll see that the governor has now signed into law four pieces of legislation that impact EDA. Two are around the Angel Tax Credit and the Innovation Evergreen Fund program. Both of these are improvements to the program that we think will help us effectuate those, getting those dollars out the door and making those programs really impactful for the industry. And so those were really great to see signed as of June 30th. Also, it wouldn't be a year lately without further updates to the film tax credit program. So we have a new piece of legislation further improving the film tax credit program. This is one that we are going to immediately jump on as far as some limited rulemaking that we anticipate, but most of it is pretty directly applicable and stuff that we can implement without as many rules as has been in the past. Two sitting on the governor's desk right now are related to improvements to the CAFE program and the creation of that manufacturing program. And so we're looking forward. In the CAFE bill, there's also some changes to the Aspire program specifically related to transformative projects and healthcare services. So those, when they are ripe and the governor is ready to sign, will be ready to go to implement as soon as possible. And then lastly, just calling out when it comes to Aspire, there was one seemingly, words matter, a small but mighty change to the Aspire program has been signed into law related to the program to have the Treasury purchase unused tax credits. This is now a mandatory buyback program, so may to shall was the big change there in the legislation. And then not on this list, but just a note, in addition to the Aspire change that was signed yesterday, there was also a bill signed that bring some of our tax credit allowance from both the Brownfield and the Aspire program over to the HMFA, the Housing and Mortgage Financing Authority, for them to run an auction using those credits. So we will be tracking those transfers and making sure that we're consistent in future approvals with those new balances. With that, any one of these are great conversations to have in deeper level, but just a really exciting and impactful bunch of bills. And with that, I will pass things back to the chairman.
Great. Thanks, Mary. We will now enter the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Danielle Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak one at a time in the order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment period portion of the meeting. Members of the public attending via phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star and then one to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue and to provide comment based on the order they are received. I'll now share the NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may only register to speak once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all those who wish to speak, and related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thanks, Danielle. I'd like to now acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comments at this time, first via Teams. Do we see any hands raised on Teams? Danielle and Ranira, anything?
No, Chairman, we do not.
Okay. Next, I'm going to go to people on the phone. Operator, is there anyone on the phone who wishes to speak?
Thank you. I have no questions at this time, but again, ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question or make a comment, please unmute your phone, press star and then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star and then two. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press star one. It may take a few moments for questions to come in. Please stand by. And at this time, I have no questions.
Okay, thank you, operator. Okay, hearing no questions or no hands raised, we're going to move on with the rest of the meeting. We'll now move to the items for consideration. First, as we do at each of these board meetings, give a quick summary of the committee activity that took place between board meetings. The NJEDA's Incentives Committee met on July 9th and considered several items which are being presented for action today, including the approval of the special adoption and concurrently proposed rules for the Aspire program, which we call 3.0, the approval of a historic property reinvestment tax credit award, and one digital media tax credit application for approval. Staff will present on each of these items today. So moving on with the agenda first, Dan is going to present on the special adoption and concurrently proposed rules for Aspire 3.0.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, members. Next slide, please. Next one. So we're seeking your approval to adopt several updates to the Aspire program rules. First, let me provide some framing. In January of this year, Governor Murphy signed the third major piece of legislation impacting the Aspire program, hence the reference to Aspire 3.0 and the board memo. This latest legislation builds on the Economic Recovery Act of 2021, which created the Aspire program, and on significant amendments enacted in 2023. Next slide, please. The most recent bill contains two buckets of provisions. The first bucket took effect immediately upon the bill signing and do not require rule changes. They include expanding the number of government restricted municipalities, or GRMs. So Camden, East Orange, and New Brunswick were added to the list of GRMs, bringing the total to six under this program. Program and the GRMs are eligible for the program's highest award caps. Number two, increasing the award caps for the original GRMs of Atlantic City, Patterson, and Trenton. Projects can now receive up to 85% of the eligible cost as award versus 80% previously. Note that projects in the new GRMs can receive up to 80% of eligible costs as an award. Number three, expanding eligible areas. The program now includes planning areas two and designated centers under the State Development and Redevelopment Plan, which broadens where projects can qualify. Previously, these areas had to be within a half a mile of a high-frequency rail or bus stop. We found this condition very difficult to meet. The new bill removes this condition. And four, lowering the threshold for residential mixed-use transformative projects. The minimum commercial square footage for transformative residential mixed-use projects was reduced from 50,000 to 30,000 square feet. Next slide, please. So the second group of, or the second bucket of revisions require an update to the program rules. My colleague, Julian Schmidt, the director of the Aspire program, will summarize these provisions.
Thanks, Dan. There are four major provisions that require rule updates. First, warehouse distribution centers. Under previous versions of the program, this use didn't qualify. The statute allows this use only if there are at least $10 million in remediation costs. In the rules, we're recommending that a licensed site remediation professional certify those costs. Projects in government and restricted municipalities can now elect for a five-year eligibility period. We're doing this to help spur development in those six government restricted municipalities. In the next slide, we'll propose further details on this provision. There's a new eligible project type, special mission nonprofit. We'll clarify.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, can you go back to the previous slide? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you. There's a new eligible project type, special mission nonprofit. We'll clarify what those projects entail in the following slides. And previously, the program did not have the ability to allow for the partial sale of a project that has been approved by an Aspire award. This provision allows a developer to sell a building, buildings, or portions of buildings that are part of a larger award. We'll clarify details in the following slides. Next slide, please. The five-year eligibility period option is only available for projects in GRMs or special mission nonprofit projects. Legislation now allows applicants to elect for a five-year eligibility period in lieu of the 10-year period. This enables projects to get better pricing on the tax credits, on the Aspire tax credits. Right now, our current rules call for a true-up period or the review of the project's actual returns at the end of year 7 and an over-enrichment analysis in year 10. During these checks, the authority evaluates the developer's actual rate of return on investment against the maximum rate that was determined at board approval. We need to adjust these check-ins for projects with a five-year eligibility period. And in the Aspire 3.0 rules, we're proposing that these true-up reviews be conducted in years 3 and 5. We also propose that commercial projects electing for the shortened eligibility period have net benefit tests conducted over a 10-year period, and we will require a 10-year compliance period in kind. Next slide, please. New project type was created called a special mission nonprofit project. These projects are social service enriched projects with shorter term overnight stays. An example of this type of transitional housing is the Ronald McDonald House. The projects are required to have housing for individuals requiring special needs or social services as clarified in a social services plan. Next slide, please. The eligibility criteria for special mission nonprofits include the projects need to be located in 6 government-restricted municipalities or an enhanced municipality. The award cap is up to 85% of eligible project costs, up to $120 million. These projects, as mentioned, can choose the five-year eligibility period. It's important to note that we're trying to limit the type of project to be consistent with legislative intent. So, therefore, we exclude projects that can either take advantage of other funding sources or can qualify for other project types under the Aspire program from being eligible as a special mission nonprofit project. Special mission nonprofit projects are not considered residential or commercial projects, but a separate category altogether. Next slide, please. Legislation now allows for the sale of buildings that are part of a larger Aspire award during the eligibility period. We propose analyzing the returns generated by the sale of buildings compared to the reasonable and appropriate rate of return, which was determined at board approval. In the rules, we propose that the building or portion of building that were sold during the eligibility period, and only if the project exceeds the maximum rate of return, the developer would remit 20% of net proceeds above the reasonable and appropriate rate of return to the state. Next slide, please.
Yeah. So to illustrate how this works, let's look at a hypothetical example of commercial project that has $250 million worth of development costs and total eligible costs of $212.5 million. When we present a recommendation of an Aspire award for board approval, we include two types of returns in the board memo. The anticipated return that reflects the expected financial performance of the project, and the maximum or reasonable rate of return. The reasonable rate of return is based on the project's asset class and location. It serves as a threshold, the point at which the project has received enough public support. Once the return exceeds the threshold, this project becomes over-enriched. In this example, the projected return is 13.49%, and the reasonable rate of return is 17.35%. Let's assume a building sale in year 5, and let's assume that the building sale pushes the projected financial performance beyond the reasonable rate of return, which in this case is 19.06%. Let's also assume this translates into excess proceeds of $12.2 million. Next slide, please. So the developer would need to remit 20% of the $12.2 million to the state, which is $2.44 million. Next slide, please. We are proposing another option for multi-phase transformative projects. if the developer reinvests 100% of the net proceeds from the sale back into the project, we're proposing that the state not take a share of those proceeds. Instead, we'll look at the IRR at the end of the year 7 and at the end of the eligibility period in year 10 and stick to the sharing formula in the statute. So these are recommendations to update the program rules. Let us stop here and take any questions.
Hey, Dan, I know we talked about this in committee, but on this particular slide, we're looking at what if the developer decides to reinvest 50% of the proceeds?
We're going to look at the reasonable rate of return, and if it pushes past, if it's not 100%, then we're going to use the 20% formula.
Okay. Right. And I know, again, we talked about this in committee, but for people, how did we determine the 20% share?
So we determined the 20% by looking at the net proceeds of the sale and looking at the project performance to date, plus the anticipated performance for the rest of the eligibility period.
Right, but why 20%? Why not, you know, 70%?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman, for the clarification. So right now, the formula in the current statute provides a buffer before the state takes 20% of the proceeds. We're proposing to eliminate the buffer. We feel that buffer is too much in the statute. So if the buffer remained in this example, the state would not get a share because the 15% would push the maximum or reasonable rate of return to 19.96%.
Got it. And just to be clear, the current statute applies at the end of the project, right? So this is where this amendment or change is when you sell a building somewhere during the project.
That's correct. During the eligibility period.
Yeah.
Correct.
Got it.
Green Chair, this is Mafiel. I have a question. How would this program or these changes affect a particular project that is going for HMFA and Spire?
Let me think about that. So let me first say that this provision is only going to be applicable to one or two projects that we know of. It's not going to be applicable to most projects because most projects are not trying to sell a portion of the project during the eligibility period. Don't think it would affect HMFA. The developer still has tax credits and from HMFA or award. The developer still on the hook for meeting the compliance requirements under Aspire, and I assume would still be on the hook for meeting their performance requirement from HMFA. At worst, the developer would probably may need to get some kind of approval from HMFA if they're selling a building that has a LIHTC award.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any other questions? Dan, is there more changes, or is this it?
So there's some other minor changes, such as like the community benefit agreement. You know, we put it on the same schedule as a board condition or the same timeline as a board condition as other obligations. So we give you up to a year. They're in the rules, but there's several other minor changes.
Mostly administrative in nature, Chairman.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say nothing to discuss today. I mean, are we at the point where we can take a motion on this?
Yes.
Okay. Could I hear a motion to approve the suggested change?
So moved.
Second.
Angelo.
Thanks, Rob. Any further discussion? By hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next on Historic Property Reinvestment Program.
Good morning. I'm here to recommend a tax credit award under the Historic Property Reinvestment Program to 418 Federal Partners GSDC LLC in the not-to-exceed amount of $7,102,684.20 for the 418 Federal Partners GSDC Rehabilitation Project located in Camden. The program is designed to complement the Federal Historic Tax Credit Program, and it provides credit between 45 and 60% of eligible costs up to maximum caps based on project type and location. The project being presented here today is located within a qualified incentive tract, therefore is eligible to a credit of 60% of eligible costs up to a maximum of $12 million. The last application round under the program closed in December of last year, where we received 10 applications, representing a combined total project cost of just under $430 million and a maximum tax credit request of just over $88 million. Out of the applications received, one was withdrawn by the applicant, two have been approved by the board earlier this year for a combined maximum tax credit amount of just over $22 million. One is being presented today, and six remain under review. This project consists of the adaptive reuse of the existing South Jersey Gas Electric and Traction Office Building, also known as the Camden Free Public Library due to its most current use. And the building has been empty for over 5 years. The rehabilitation will create over 25,000 square feet of institutional and cultural museum space and over 6,000 square feet of restaurant and retail and community themed space. The building's main anticipated tenant is Rutgers University Camden, which intends to use the building as a location of its arts program and as a space for a community art collaborative. The project is scheduled to be completed in a single phase. The applicant is a special purpose entity, which was established in 2021 and is wholly owned and operated by Scrungio Borsch International, or SBI, which is a professional services firm that provides construction and project management services and has extensive experience in the sectors of retail, commercial, industrial, family, multifamily, and mixed use. And some of their previous experience shows projects of similar size and complexity of the project being presented here, both in the U.S. and internationally, including various projects that include the rehabilitation of historic buildings. There is no co-applicant for this application. Part of the reviews that we completed sister agency review, legal and underwriting review of project costs, including eligible cost review, proposed construction schedule, as well as the project was reviewed by scoring committee to ensure that the project met the minimum score of 50 under the program, which they did with a score of 67 out of a possible 100. Finally, the NJEDA's underwriting department completed review of the project's financials and found that the applicant showed they had adequate sources of funding to cover all project costs and that there's a reasonable expectation that the sources of funding will be available to complete the project. The applicant also illustrated their wherewithal to meet the minimum 20% equity contribution requirement for the program and demonstrated that a financing gap exists. And I guess that is the gist. If anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Second?
Weinrich, second.
Thanks, Josh. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any recusals?
Yes, okay. Aaron Cruz.
That's a yes, not a recusal,
yes.
Correct?
Recusal, yep.
Can you state the reason for the recusal?
Yeah, I previously let staff know, but due to my work as the first vice chancellor of the Rutgers Law School Camden Alumni Association.
Noted. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. All right, next, Chris on digital media tax credits.
Thank you, Chairman. The team has completed the review of the application and recommends NFL Productions LLC for approval under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program for their fiscal year 2025 digital media content production expenses. These digital media expenses are mostly for post-production work done at their headquarters in Mount Laurel. As part of eligibility for credits under the program, a production must meet two expense eligibility thresholds. The first is that 50% of the applicant's qualified digital media content production expenses must be for wages and salaries paid to full-time W-2 employees in New Jersey. The second is the applicant must incur at least $2 million in qualified digital media content production expenses through vendors authorized to do business in New Jersey. This project meets both eligibility requirements with 78% of its qualified spend incurred for wages and salaries paid to New Jersey workers and clearing the $2 million vendor spend with just over $6.5 million in vendor spend. They had a total qualified spend of about $44 million for a total award of roughly $15 million. We have a current tax clearance certificate for the applicant, a budget comfort letter, legal review, and Department of Labor checks are clear, and we have a taxation acknowledgement letter for the applicant. Happy to answer any questions or address any concerns.
Chris, I know we talked about this in committee. This will bring NFL up to date in terms of, because I know we did a bunch of these for past years, correct?
That is correct. And then their fiscal year will end in March because they operate on a March 31st fiscal year. And I assume that we will be getting another application for their 26 expenses at that point.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Second.
Fred Dumont, second.
Thanks, Fred. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposals, recusals, abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, we're going to move on to the policy committee segment of the meeting. I'll give a policy committee report on the meeting that occurred on July 10th. The policy committee met and considered several items which are being presented for action today. Highlights include the Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Sale for 2025, the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program Tax Credit Auction Update, three qualified investments under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program, and one Strategic Innovation Center investment. So a lot of action items today. So moving on with the agenda, first up is Sebastian on modifications to the New Jersey Clean Energy Loan or NJ Cells program.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sebastian Gimbay. I'm an analyst on the clean energy team and the program lead for the New Jersey Clean Energy Loans or NJ Cells program. This modification request for the NJ Cells program is the second SSBCI program modification request. The first one for Angel Match, was approved by the board last month and subsequently received U.S. Treasury approval. After today's board approval, NJEDA will seek approval from U.S. Treasury for the NJ Cells modifications. I'll start off with a quick background about the program. NJ Cells is an $80 million co-lending program funded by the State Small Business Credit Initiative through the U.S. Treasury. The program offers low-interest loans to finance clean energy businesses and clean energy projects. The NJEDA's loan has a range between $250,000 to $10 million, and that must be matched at least one-to-one by one or more private lenders, making the total aggregate loan amount between $500,000 and $20 million. Now, we would like to propose the following changes to the NJ Cells program to the board for approval. The first change is an increase of the NJEDA's base interest rate reduction from 3% to 4%. The additional 1% interest rate reduction for each of the special terms, which are being a minority woman or veteran-owned business and being located in an overburdened community, will remain the same. This will change the total possible interest rate reduction on the NJEDA's loan compared to the private lenders from 3% to 5% to now 4% to 6%. The second change is to modify the program's loan forgiveness terms. Currently, the terms are that 10% of the NJEDA's loan will be forgiven if the borrower meets the special terms described previously and creates at least one new full-time equivalent job per $100,000 of aggregate lending for the project. This will now be changed to 20% loan forgiveness of the NJEDA's loan if the borrower meets the special terms and creates at least one job per $150,000 of aggregate lending for the project. These two modifications will further incentivize greater program participation, making the program more competitive in the market and help meet NJEDA's spending goals for SSBCI funding. The third change is to increase the program's current delegated authority to the chief executive officer from up to $3 million to up to $5 million to approve loans for the program. An expanded delegated authority will allow staff to better align loan closing timeframes with private lenders as required by SSBCI. Now, the fourth and final change being proposed is a restructuring of the program scoring criteria. The category direct jobs forecast to be created relative to dollar amount of total loan for the project will be removed from the scoring criteria. The category benefits to overburdened communities will be condensed, and the categories number of full-time equivalent employees at time of application, the total loan amount from NJEDA and financial institutions requested for the project, and the category ratio of private dollars to NJEDA dollars in the total loan amount requested for the project at the time of application will all be condensed and streamlined. The points for the scoring criteria will be reallocated accordingly. Simplifying the scoring criteria will make the program application process more streamlined and accessible, particularly to reduce the level of resources small businesses have to expend to apply for the program and more equitably distribute points while still prioritizing SSBCI goals. In summation, we would like to request an increase in the base interest rate reduction of the NJCELS loan, an increase in loan forgiveness, an increase in delegated authority, and the condensing and streamlining of the program scoring criteria. We are proposing these changes to make the program more attractive and to accelerate the deployment of SSBCI funds. I'd also like to reiterate that U.S. Treasury approval will be needed for these changes after board approval. We have already previewed these changes with U.S. Treasury, and they have considered these changes to be minor only. Treasury has indicated no issues in our preview of the proposed changes to them. That's everything. Thank you.
And Sebastian, just remind us, I'm reading, of the first tranche was $79 million. How much has been deployed at this point?
The NJCELS program, only $10.5 million have been deployed to date.
Got it. So that $63 million is a pretty ambitious target.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Delage.
Thanks, Phil. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the modifications are approved. Thanks, Sebastian. Next, Riley on Economic Security Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Sale 2025.
Thank you, Chairman, and good morning, members. The request before you today is to approve the sale of up to $25 million in corporation business tax and insurance premiums tax credits through the 2025 Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Auction. If this is approved, NJEDA will hold two tax credit auctions concurrently. This slide shows a comparison between the Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Auction and the Innovation Evergreen Fund Tax Credit Auction, led by my colleague Alexander, who will be presenting next. The first key difference is the use of proceeds. The proceeds of the Food Desert Relief Auction will be used for grants, loans, and technical assistance to strengthen food security in New Jersey's designated food desert communities. The proceeds of the Evergreen auction will be used for co-investments into high-growth businesses based in New Jersey. Another difference is in the pricing and compliance requirements. The Food Desert option has a higher minimum price at 85 cents on the dollar and no compliance requirements after the close of the purchase transaction. Evergreen has an additional component alongside the financial bid, which is a strategic commitment to support the state's innovation ecosystem, which is then factored into scoring and approving bids. That strategic commitment component is reflected in the pricing for Evergreen, which starts at 75 cents on the dollar. The final difference I'll highlight is in the approval process. In Evergreen, approvals of final bids are done by the board, but in the Food Desert auction, because approvals are based solely on the bid price, the board has previously delegated authority to the CEO to make those approvals. However, the maximum amount of tax credits that can be sold through the Food Desert auction must be approved by the board beforehand, which is the request before you today for a maximum of $25 million in 2025. Next slide, please. If this is approved, the Food Desert and Evergreen auctions will be held concurrently starting in early September. The second request in this memo is for a minor revision to the Food Equity and Economic Development in New Jersey grant program, or Feed New Jersey. Staff determined that a requirement in the board memo conflicted with the notice of funding availability and other program materials. The requirement was that any project involving construction must include a contingency of 10% in the submitted budget for that budget to be considered complete. We've determined that requirement is not necessary for the success of the program. In the event of cost increases, grantees may seek budget modifications to reallocate funds between lines or identify additional outside funding. Staff is requesting approval to remove this requirement to align all program materials and provide consistency to Feed NJ applicants. Thank you. I'm happy to take any questions.
And just Riley, I haven't asked one of these acronym questions in a long time, but what is the NOFA?
NOFA is the Notice of Funding Availability.
Yeah, thanks. Any questions on this? And we're reading the last bullet point in the top. So some early September would be the expected launch date of the auctions.
Yes.
Hearing no questions, could I hear a motion to approve?
Move it, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. Second.
Dragon, second.
Thanks, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposition, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, we'll move
Chairman,
on.
Sorry. Chairman, if I could just jump in for 2 seconds. Just wanted to make a bittersweet note. First of all, thanks, Riley, for, as always, a great presentation. Bittersweet news that Riley is let us know she's moving on later this summer and following the old Horace Greeley advice to go west. She will be deeply, deeply missed. The Food Desert Tax Credit is one example of many, many projects over the years that Riley has had a huge, huge impact on. And I would note that the average or median IQ of the EDA goes down a little bit once Riley goes, because she's one of the smartest and most talented people I've had a chance to work with in my career. So all the best to Riley. And thanks for her great work and contributions over the years to the EDA.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Riley. All right, next, Alexander, on the Evergreen Innovation Program Tax Credit Auction. Which, by
Thank
the way,
you.
Great, it was great the way you both have compared these two. It's very helpful.
Thanks, Chairman. We'll give Riley the credit for that, though. She did a great job explaining the differences between the two programs. Thank you. I'm glad to present an update on the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund Tax Credit Auction Program on the back of Riley's presentation on the Food Desert Relief Tax Credit Auction Program. Ahead of the planned 2025 program auction, we are presenting a recommendation for the members to approve modifications to the scoring process for program strategic commitment proposals. As Riley mentioned, unlike the Food Desert auction, when corporate partners purchase tax credits through the Evergreen Fund program, they're not just buying tax credits with dollars, but also with commitments of time, energy, and financial contributions to support the state's innovation ecosystem through open-ended proposals we call strategic commitments. Next slide, please. The Evergreen Fund program is a partnership with the private sector that raises and invests funds in high-growth New Jersey-based companies and increases venture capital funding available to the state's ecosystem. To fund program investments and expenses, the Economic Recovery Act authorizes the EDA to sell up to $300 million of program tax credits to corporations operating in New Jersey. The EDA board approved the sale of $50 million of initial program tax credits in December of 2022, and the planned 2025 auction will represent the second program capital raise. The tax credit auctions effectively offer corporations an opportunity to prepay their New Jersey taxes at a discount of up to 25%. All program applications must include a strategic commitment proposal, whereby corporations offer strategic support to strengthen the state's innovation ecosystem. Strategic commitment proposals are evaluated by authority staff to assess the level of support offered to the state's innovation ecosystem. Each program strategic commitment represents a unique open-ended proposal, and a description of the commitments used in the most recent tax credit auction is included in Appendix B of the memorandum. Applicants' bids are scored, and total scores are comprised of both a strategic commitment score and a financial bid price score, which can impact tax credits allocated to a given applicant. Based on the results of the 2022 auction, staff is bringing forward a recommendation this month to simplify the scoring process for program strategic commitments. Under the new proposal, an applicant's strategic commitment score will simply be a function of the total financial and in-kind cost of their strategic commitment proposal as a proportion of the amount of tax credits requested. Staff believes the proposed updates to the program scoring methodology will demystify the scoring process for potential corporate bidders, encourage more effective bids, and better tie program scoring to compliance. Thank you for the consideration, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Move it. Weinrich.
Thanks, Josh. Second?
Second, Maciel Ferrara.
Thanks. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. All right, next, Alexander, are you going to go forward with the first evergreen item?
Yep,
potential
exactly.
Investment?
That's what I'm sticking with.
Okay.
Next, I'll present staff's recommendation for the EDA's seventh qualified investment under the Evergreen Fund program. To date, we have formal partnerships in place with 21 approved qualified venture firms and have invested and reserved over $22 million across six portfolio company investments. Authority staff is bringing forward a total of three additional qualified investments for approval this month. Before we jump into the specific requests for approval, we wanted to offer a snapshot of the current portfolio of existing and proposed program investments. Assuming all three investments are approved and closed, we will have a diverse portfolio of investments into eight innovative New Jersey businesses in sectors including healthcare, AI, and clean energy, to name a few. The potential eight portfolio companies represent investment capital of $15 million, with an additional $12 million in capital reserved for future follow-on investments into the businesses. To date, the program has been catalytic in attracting private sector capital into this portfolio of innovative early-stage businesses poised for continued economic and job growth here in New Jersey. With that, I'll jump into the first request for approval.
Hey, Alexander, I think this is a great page. Remind us what our current capital allocation is. Like, in other words, if the bottom of the page is $27 million, the 15 plus the 12, what's our existing capital base against that?
So assuming all three investments are approved today, we'll have about $10 million remaining of unallocated capital available for additional investments.
Got it. And that will be replenished with the next tax credit auction, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Next slide, please. The first program investment recommended for funding is an application by Covenant Venture Capital, LLC, for a $1.75 million co-investment into the Series Seed Preferred Stock Financing round of Hill Research, an AI startup that leverages generative AI to accelerate clinical trials for pharmaceutical companies. Upon approval, staff will reserve up to an additional $290,000 for direct administrative expenses and up to an additional $280,000 for related management fees. Covenant Venture Capital was approved as a qualified venture firm in July 2023. The firm is focused on investing in companies developing artificial intelligence technologies and other innovative early-stage technology and life sciences companies. Covenant currently manages approximately $70 million in capital across one credit income and two equity fund strategies. Hill Research is a woman-led generative AI company founded in Boston, but is pivoting its core operations to New Jersey as a result of the proposed program investment and to leverage the state's strong pharma ecosystem, which represent the company's customer base. Hill Research's generative AI software solution helps pharmaceutical company customers address key challenges in the clinical trial lifecycle as they progress their therapeutics through the FDA clearance process. Current customers include notable pharmaceutical companies like Moderna, Boston Pharmaceuticals, and Eli Lilly. The EDA's investment will be part of a $7.5 million Series Seed round that Hill Research will use to continue to develop its AI platform, expand its market presence, and scale its operations, including its New Jersey footprint. I'm happy to take any questions about Hill Research at this time.
Okay, hearing no questions. We're going to do motions on each of these separately.
Yes.
So we'll do a motion now. Okay. So could I hear a motion to approve the investment into Hill Research? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
I'm sorry. Yep. Could we get a motion on that?
Oh, did I screw that up?
I think we skipped over it. Yep.
I apologize. Thank you.
Robert Schimko, motion.
Second.
Could I hear a second?
Ex post second.
Ex post second. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, is it Jogo Health?
Yes. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. I will present the next two investment approvals together. Since the investments by two different venture firms into the same New Jersey business called the Jogo Health. The first is an application by Creative Ventures for $1,186,060 investment into the extended series preferred A1 stock financing round of Jogo Health. Upon approval, staff will further reserve an additional $177,900 for management fees and $240,000 for direct administrative expenses. The second application is by Acma Capital for $2 million investment into the same financing round of Jogo Health. Upon approval, staff will further reserve an additional $3 million for follow-on investments, as well as $360,000 for management fees and $265,000 for administrative expenses. The two firms, the first one, Creative Ventures, is a minority-owned California-based early-stage deep technology venture firm. The firm currently maintains $61 million in assets under management and invests in early-stage companies addressing global secular trends such as labor shortages, rising healthcare costs, and climate change. The second firm, Atma Capital, was founded in 2021 as a woman-led seed stage venture capital firm with a presence in California, Dubai, and China. The firm is investing out of a $200 million first fund into deep technology startups with positive societal and environmental impact. The business Jogo Health is a Bridgewater-based medtech and digital health company that has developed an FDA-approved solution for treatment of chronic pain and neuromuscular disorders. Their innovative approach leverages neuroplasticity through an AI-powered platform to restrain pain pathways and provide non-invasive and drug-free relief for conditions such as chronic back pain, stroke paralysis, migraines, and incontinence. The company is led by an experienced team with a mix of entrepreneurial success and deep domain expertise, including prior successful exits. The two founders lead a team of 17 full-time employees and a number of part-time therapists and health practitioners. EDA's investment will be part of a $15 million Series Preferred Stock round that Jovo Health will use for several key initiatives, including, among others, fulfilling demand from self-insured employers, initiating pharma pilots and partnerships, and expanding clinical trials for Parkinson's, tremors, and other indications. This concludes my prepared remarks, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Maybe just two comments that we talked about in committee. One is, this is a situation where we have two approved venture firms investing in the same deal. And again, as I think we discussed the committee, this was anticipated when we structured the program. And then the second is, I think it, over $3 million, 3.2, this would be one of our largest investments. I don't know if anybody, Kathleen or anybody, would just want to comment on those two for the general board.
I would just add, Chairman, that it was contemplated when we drafted the rules for the program to allow for co-investments for two different firms into one transaction. And as folks might have heard, there is a change in the legislation that was part of the legislation process that went through that actually increases the capacity for evergreen investments up to $10 million. So $5 million was the initial legislation. We're still under that $5 million cap here, and we do have caps across the portfolio relative to concentration exposure that we closely monitor as well.
Great, thanks. Any further questions? Okay, can you hear a motion to approve the investment into Jovo Health?
Move it. Weiner.
Thanks, Jobs. Second.
Rafael Ferrara. Second.
Thanks. Any further discussion? Okay, hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Thank you. A nice portfolio you're developing. Next on another active area for strategic innovation centers, Tim on Coriol Labs.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be with you to offer our recommendation of approval for a strategic innovation center investment of up to $20 million into the newly formed NJ Coriol Labs Innovation Center, LLC, in which NJEDA will be a 50% owner along with the Coriol Institute for Medical Research. The Innovation Center, to be built within Coriol's new 90,000 square foot headquarters in Camden, will provide for a business creation hub and step out labs for biotech companies and promote overall scientific collaboration in the region. The Innovation Center will enter into a real estate lease with Coriol for the top two floors within the to-be-built medical research facility of approximately 45,000 square feet, comprised of approximately 13,000 square feet of common and auxiliary space, 18,000 square feet of wet labs fitted for co-working laboratory, 9,000 square feet of office space, and 3,000 square feet of vivarium for no less than 15 years at 1301 Walnut Street in Camden, New Jersey, adjacent to Campbell's, proximal to Subaru, and just across the river from Philadelphia. That space will be subleased to tenants or users that might not otherwise have access to the resources, the necessary equipment, sufficient capital, or an ecosystem that could help bring along the development runway. And it will serve as a regional center in the Mid-Atlantic to promote collaboration in the life sciences. At any given point, the space will host 16 to 24 companies focused on cancer research, epigenetics, stem cells, and drug development. Joined with the EDA in this endeavor is our partner, the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, that works to accelerate scientific discovery by generating world-class biomaterials and conducting groundbreaking research in biobanking and epigenetics. The Institute was founded in 1953 by virologist Dr. Louis L. Coriell. His breakthrough most directly led to the creation of the polio vaccine. Today, Coriell's biobank manages the world's most diverse collection of cell lines, DNA, and other biomaterials gathered and distributed for use by the international medical research community. Coriell has phenomenal intelligence and partnerships in place with some of the world's preeminent medical institutions. Our academic partners in this SIC are Rutgers and Rowan University, two of the state's medical schools, to engage their researchers, staff, and students that can support the users or tenants of the space. The Innovation Center will be operated by a third-party program management company with experience in marketing, tenant recruitment, and delivering programmatic operations in a life science co-working office and lab space selected by Coriell and approved by the NJEDA. This innovation center, placed to expand the available known incubator space for life science companies in New Jersey, will provide meaningful resource to entrepreneurs in the region to develop cutting-edge therapies and maintain such tremendous developments and opportunities in the state. I'll conclude reiterating the request for approval of the $20 million investment to help capitalize the NJA Coriell Labs Innovation Center LLC, including authorization to the CEO to execute all documents required, including the operating agreement, and a 4.5% administrative fee to the EDA plus associated authority legal costs as allowed by the IRF statute. So thank you very much for the consideration, and any questions are welcome.
Chairman, if I may, just add a little bit of context to Tim's earlier comments and Sullivan about the 12th Strategic Innovation Center being announced earlier this week down at Rowan. That focus is MedTech, which is more medical device and diagnostics. This center, we've gotten questions around how will they work together. This center is more biologics and drug discovery. It will have wet labs. So you can imagine a scenario where they would collaborate, but that is the distinction in South Jersey between the two innovation centers.
And Kathleen, I think for everybody, I know I was, when we first discussed this, just give us 30 seconds on Coriell Labs, because it's a pretty amazing story, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's certainly a hidden gem within the state of New Jersey. It's the largest biobank in the world. So they have cryogenic banks with stem cell lines in Camden. They're moving those in Camden to this new site. And then we'll have innovation floors in the new building for this. But certainly, when you think about clinical trials, Coriell is at the top of the list for stem cells deposits that folks need to do clinical testing on. And they ship their cells all over the world. So although maybe not known very well within the state of New Jersey, at least I've learned throughout the world, their reputation precedes them as being a leader in this field.
Okay. It is again, another fun fact to know about New Jersey. Could I hear a motion to approve the establishment of the Strategic Innovation Center at Coriell Labs?
Dragon, motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Second.
And Angelo, second.
Thanks, Rob. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved.
The only thing I note, everyone is with between Rowan and Cooper earlier in the week, Coriell and the Atlantic City aviation related one, which we've done a while ago. There are now three SICs in South Jersey, which is starting to color in the map in a good and equitable way.
Great. Okay, authority matters. Emma, on I think the first two, actually all three. First on FIFA World Cup.
Thanks, Chairman. As part of the State of New Jersey Fiscal Year 2026 Appropriations Act, which was signed into law by Governor Murphy on June 30th, the NJEDA is advancing a set of strategic funding initiatives designed to advance economic growth, statewide marketing, and major event activation. Today, we are bringing forward three board items that reflect those priorities: continued support for the North Shore Festival, funding for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, and a final allocation to Choose New Jersey for two target marketing campaigns under their current business attraction marketing contract. The first item consists of a request for board approval of a $2 million allocation by a grant agreement to the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, NJPAC, to support the continued production of the North Shore Festival. This funding is provided through the Fiscal Year 2026 Appropriations Act, where the NJEDA was allocated $2 million for arts and innovation, with specific budget language allocating this funding to NJPAC for a 2026 North Shore Festival. North Shore has become a signature statewide initiative for placemaking, tourism, and economic activity, spanning Newark, Asbury Park, and Atlantic City, with events focused on music, innovation, comedy, and community arts. What makes this festival truly special is its ability to blend top-tier talent with meaningful local investment. The 2025 lineup featured acts from Jon Stewart, Pete Davidson, and John Mulaney, Amy Poehler, and Tina Fey, Stone Temple Pilots, Third Eye Blind, George Clinton, and Parliament Funkadelic, Bleachers, and Rock the Bells Festival, alongside dozens of other events and free community activations. Since launching in 2023, North Shore has drawn over 500,000 attendees, generated more than $25 million in ticket event revenue, and has awarded nearly $400,000 in community arts grants to local creative nonprofits. This year, it expanded further with a year-long arts series in Atlantic City, investing more than $170,000 in community programming. NJEDA funding will support NJPAC's continued planning and delivery of the festival, with milestone-based disbursements and monthly reporting to ensure transparency, community equity, and statewide economic impact. Just as North Shore underscores how the arts can be a powerful driver of local economic development, our next item represents another transformational opportunity, this time on the global stage. The members are being asked to approve a $15 million allocation to the New York, New Jersey 2026 FIBA World Cup Host Committee via grant agreement funded through the Fiscal Year 2025 Appropriations Act, with spending direction provided in the FY25 Omnibus Supplemental Bill. Additionally, the members are asked to approve delegated authority to the CEO to execute the grant agreement between NJEDA and the Host Committee, which is in substantially final form upon it being agreed to and finalized. As part of the FY2025 budget, the NJEDA received $19 million in events attraction and marketing funding to support high-impact public-facing initiatives. As part of the FY25 Omnibus Supplemental Bill, which passed during the FY26 budget process, the legislature included specific language stating that $15 million of the NJEDA's events attraction marketing appropriation should be allocated to the New York-New Jersey Host Committee to support the planning and implementation of statewide activations tied to the 2026 FIBA World Cup. The Host Committee, a bi-state nonprofit entity, is responsible for fan programming, cultural events, stakeholder coordination, and leveraging the tournament to create lasting economic value in New Jersey. With MetLife Stadium selected to host the World Cup final, this funding will help ensure New Jersey can fully capitalize on the global attention and tourism expected from the tournament. New Jersey's funding also complements a broader regional effort, with New York and Pennsylvania allocating resources to support activations in their respective states. Together, this tri-state coordination reflects a whole-of-location strategy designed to deliver a seamless fan experience, elevate the region's global visibility, and drive economic value across state lines. Activities, specifically those in New Jersey, will include large-scale fan festivals and FIFA game viewing zones, live entertainment and cultural programming, small business support, downtown activations and marketing. Funding will be dispersed following execution of a grant agreement and receipt of a detailed itemized budget and implementation plan. And given the short timeline to July 2026, monthly reports will be required to track expenditures, progress against milestones, and local economic impact. With that, I will open it up to any questions on North Shore or the World Cup.
And we'll take, I assume we'll do individual motions on each. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Mary, just a question. So New Jersey's contributing $15 million. Is New York also making a contribution here?
New York is. It's not $15 million. New York is bigger. I believe it's 20 or 25.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, let's do North Shore first. Could I hear a motion to approve the allocation of $2 million to North Shore for 2026.
Move it, Reinhold.
Thanks, Josh. Second?
Dragon, second.
Thanks, Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, the allocation of $15 million to the New York, New Jersey World Cup Host Committee.
Fred Dumont, make the motion, Chair.
Thank you, Fred. Second.
Elijah, second.
Thanks, Phil. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none again, the motion is approved. Now, Emma, you want to choose?
Yep. The final item before the committee is a contract extension for $6.25 million to Choose New Jersey, funded through a combination of remaining fiscal year 2024 business attraction marketing funds and fiscal year 25 and fiscal year 2026 events attraction marketing appropriations. If approved, this extension will bring Choose's total contract value to $27,550,000. As with the other items being presented today, this is not operational funding. This is dollar-for-dollar investment into direct marketing work, creative assets, media placements, and measurable campaigns designed to drive economic activity and business interests in New Jersey. Choose New Jersey's contract with NJEDA has been highly effective in driving awareness, elevating the state's reputation, and generating measurable results across strategic markets. Campaigns have reached billions globally and have positioned New Jersey as a compelling destination for business relocation, investment, and expansion. The contract was awarded through a competitive procurement process in 2023, following an RFP led by the NJEDA, and has delivered impressive results across multiple fronts, most notably including an AI flagship campaign launched in 2023, branding New Jersey as the next home for AI, with placements across tech and innovation hubs in San Francisco, New York, Boston, and Austin, reinforcing the state's leadership in advanced industries. The This Is New Jersey campaign generated over 4.3 billion global impressions through a mix of out-of-home, digital, and print ads. Designed to spotlight the state's strength and talent, innovation, and specialized industry assets, it ran in key domestic and international markets, including London, Germany, Japan, and India. The Name, Image, Likeness, NIL campaign has tapped into Trusted Voices, New Jersey collegiate athletes, to promote the state's economic narrative and talent pipeline, generating millions of engagements from both business audiences and New Jersey residents. And finally, strategic film and media marketing efforts have further extended New Jersey's reach with sponsored placements in Variety and activations at Cannes and Tribeca, promoting both sector-based storytelling and statewide brand visibility. Because of the strong performance of this contract, the EDA is recommending a final allocation of $6.25 million to support two targeted marketing initiatives that build on this momentum. First, the final expansion of the NIL campaign, which has leveraged high-profile student-athletes from Rutgers University to promote the state's innovation economy, diverse communities, vibrant main streets, and exceptional quality of life. This next phase will include refreshed creative, broader media placements, and an expanded roster of athletes to deepen impact and increase visibility in key markets. The goal is to further position New Jersey as a compelling destination for talent, tourism, and investment, particularly among younger audiences, business owners, and entrepreneurs. Second, it will fund the development of a new campaign focused on highlighting New Jersey's overall economic strength and momentum. This initiative will emphasize the state's leadership across sectors such as life sciences, clean energy, innovation, venture capital, financial services, and advanced manufacturing. Through tailored creative assets and strategic placements in priority regional markets, the campaign aims to reinforce the state's reputation as a powerful economic engine and leader in job creation and business growth. All funding will be used exclusively for media buys, content creation, and marketing execution, not business development or general overhead. These are distinct deliverables with measurable outcomes, and together they present a final strategic extension of a contract that has already delivered meaningful results. If folks have any questions on Choose New Jersey, I'm happy to take them.
Any questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
So, Elizabeth, second.
Second, Ferrara.
Thank you, Vanciel. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Last in this section, Danielle, on the MOU with Capital City Redevelopment Corporation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The members are asked to approve an extension to an MOU between the NJEDA and the Capital City Redevelopment Corporation, confirming the mutual understanding between the agencies as it relates to the provision of the authority support services to the CCRC. The original MOU regarding support services between the two entities was executed in 2014 and has been renewed by mutual consent annually, whereby the authority provides staff support services to the CCRC. The members are requested to extend the MOU for another one-year term as provided by the terms of the agreement. By way of background, CCRC was created by an instrumentality of the state in 1987 to plan, coordinate, and promote the public and private development within the Capital District. In particular, the authority will continue to provide staff and administrative services in support of CCRC, including but not limited to board governance, liaison with the governor's office and the governor's authorities unit, guidance on ethics matters, liaison to the State Ethics Commission, records custodian, and assistance with the Open Public Records Act, information requests, public information support services, media support, and support for legal services through the Office of the Attorney General. The MOU shall remain in effect for 1 year and may be extended upon mutual consent of both parties. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
No questions, Chair. This is Mafiel. I, of course, I have to recuse myself from this vote. I just wanted to put it on the
list. Yes, thank you. Okay. Any other questions?
Can you just please state the reason for the recusal?
I work for the City of Trenton.
And CCRC
is an active applicant in the planning board and to city council as well.
Thank you.
All right, any further questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion, Fred Dumont.
Thanks, Fred. Second?
Second, Elijah.
Thanks, Phil. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
I'm noting Mathiel's recusal. Any other recusals, opposition, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Tim, board memoranda.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. You have a couple board memos in your pack. Two that I've highlighted, or the two that I've highlighted, are both related to kind of legal affairs and annual reports from Lisa and her group. Around things like MOUs and delegated authority for legal reviews. Worth noting that we've done 27 MOUs in the last 12 months. That's more than two per month. That's a lot. And just a reminder of the breadth of the activity we do. You know, the other thing is the legal reviews. I won't go name by name or item by item there, but you know, that's something that, you know, back in the 2019-2020 era, we spent a lot of time talking about how we could beef up our due diligence and our oversight of our applicants, and started under Chris Baker's leadership and continued under Lisa's. That team does an extraordinary job keeping us out of trouble as best they can, which is an evergreen set of responsibilities. So that those activities are chronicled in that memo as well, or some of those activities are chronicled in that memo. But we have a fair bit to get through still in executive session, so I will yield the floor back to you, Chairman.
All right, thank you. I'd now like to request a motion to enter executive session to discuss a matter involving the purchase, lease, or acquisition of real estate property with public funds, and a separate matter regarding pending or anticipated litigation or contract negotiation falling within the attorney-client privilege that could adversely affect the public interest if disclosed, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. Could I hear a motion to approve entering executive session, please?
I do my motion.
Thanks. Josh, and consider that a second. Fred, that was the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, we will now enter executive session.
You're reopened to the public on the Verizon telephone line.
Okay, it actually worked.
And Danielle, we should just clarify whether Marcial rejoined or not for the last two votes.
Let's see if Danielle's on yet. Oh, yeah. Looks like she is.
I'm here, and I'm checking. Do you want to rejoin now?
It's funny.
Are you texting Marcial?
Marcia Marley is in the, she joined by a Verizon conference call right now.
I don't know if this happened to anyone else. I got bumped, but I came back in.
All right, apologies to everybody, and thank you for your patience as we work through these technical, you know, we're balancing multiple technical platforms at the moment. But it looks like we're all back in. So,
okay.
And then on the phone, we have Marcia Marley, Charles Sarlo, and in the room, you can see who's.
Phil's on.
Yep, I see everybody else, but Marcial has not rejoined.
Okay. All right, so we're going to go ahead. The first item is the New Jersey Transit Property Acquisition Phase 2. I hear a motion to approve the item as discussed in executive session.
Move it, Josh.
Thanks, Josh. Second? Anyone to second?
Dragon, second.
All right, thanks. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Second, could I hear a motion to approve the Health and Agriculture Buildings Demolition Project Litigation update as discussed in executive session? Could I hear a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thanks, Fred.
Angela, second.
Thanks,
Angela.
Rob. Thanks. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? And Matt, for the record, do we want to note the Marcial?
Yep, I have it down in my notes for the minute.
Okay. Okay. I think we voted, right? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Yes. Okay, the motion is approved. Great, thank you. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation, and we'll now request a motion to adjourn the meeting. Could I hear a motion to adjourn?
Move it.
Thanks, okay. Josh. Second. Thanks, Phil.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much. That concludes our meeting. Have a good rest of July.
Thank you, operator.
And this concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, operator.